by the demigods to Devaki with Krishna in the womb. I think I'll just read through the verse and read because of time today, so we won't do responsively. Deva Vashyesha Vashikaranam Dina Vinodam Bhattatarkaya Mahe Bhavo Naroda Sitirapya Vidyaya Kritayatas Twaya Vayashrayatmani. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O Supreme Lord, you are not an ordinary living entity appearing in this material world as a result of fruitive activities. Therefore, your appearance or birth in this world has no other cause than your pleasure potency. Similarly, the living entities who are part of you have no cause for miseries like birth, death, and old age, except when these living entities are conducted by your external energy. Report. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 15.7, Maimai Vangcho Jivaloke Jivabhuta Sanatana, the living entities are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and thus they are qualitatively one with the Lord. We can understand when the Supreme Lord appears or disappears as an incarnation. There is no other cause than his pleasure potency. We cannot force the Supreme Personality of Godhead to appear, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada Yada Hidharmasya Glanir Bhavati Bharata Dutanam Dharmasya Tadatmanam Shijam Yaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. When there is a need to diminish a burden created by the demons, the Supreme Godhead can do it in many ways because he has multifarious energies. There is no need for him to come as an incarnation, since he is not forced to do anything like ordinary living entities. The living entities come to this material world in the spirit of enjoyment, but because they want to enjoy without Krishna, Krishna Bihirmukha Haya Bhojavanchakare, they suffer birth, death, old age, and disease under the control of delusory energy. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, however, no such causes are involved. His descent is an act of his pleasure potency. We should always remember this distinction between the Lord and the ordinary living entity, and not uselessly argue that the Lord cannot come. There are philosophers who do not believe in the Lord's incarnation and who ask, why should the Supreme Lord come? But the answer is, why should he not come? Why should he be controlled by the desire of the living entity? The Lord is free to do whatever he likes. Therefore, this verse says, Vina vinodham bhattatarkayamahe. It is only for his pleasure that he comes, although he does not need to come. When the living entities come to this world for material enjoyment, they are entangled in karma and karmapala by the Lord's illusory energy. But if one seeks shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, one is again situated in his original liberated state. It's stated here, Kitayatastvai Yavayashrayatmani. One who seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is always fearless. Because we are dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should give up the idea that without Krishna we can enjoy freedom in this material world. This idea is the reason we become entangled. Now it is our duty to seek shelter again at the Lord's lotus feet. This shelter is described as abhaya, or fearless. Since Krishna is not subject to birth, death, old age, or disease, and since we are part and parcel of Krishna, we are also not subject to birth, death, old age, and disease, but we have become subject to these illusory problems because of our forgetfulness of Krishna and our position as eternal servants. Jivara sarupoya krishnera nityadas. Therefore, if we practice devotional service by always thinking of the Lord, always glorifying him, and always chanting about him, as described in text 37, Shrinvan Grinam Samsmarayang Chintayan, we will be reinstated in our original constitutional position and thus be saved. The demigods, therefore, encourage Devaki not to fear Kamsa, but to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who was already within her womb. Om Gyanatimanandasha Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksuni Tamina Tasma Sri Gurve Namaha Panchako Patrubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha Patitano Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namaha. So this is the very wonderful appearance day of Lord Sri Krishna. Very incredibly auspicious and wonderful day for all the Vaishnavas. A day that we look forward to throughout the year. And we can see, just as we are hearing about and reading about the appearance of Lord Krishna, we are also experiencing the wonderful appearance on the altar today of Radha Shyama Sundar and Krishna Balaram, and of course Gaur Nitai. And incredibly beautiful, manifesting for not only their own pleasure and the service of the devotees, but also to give pleasure to their many, many devotees who are have a wonderful opportunity to see them today. So this verse is one of the prayers of the demigods to Krishna in the womb of Devahuti. They're called the Garbhastuti prayers. And the background to this, of course, is that in the beginning, Mother Bhumi, the earth personified, became very overwhelmed and distraught by the military power that was increasing amongst the demons. And so very fearful of the presence of the demons upon this earth, she approached Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma then, along with Lord Shiva and the other demigods, went to see, went to the milk ocean, and they approached Lord Vishnu, Shirdakshai Vishnu, and they offered many prayers and asked for his help. So Krishna, of course, Vishnu said that he would soon appear on this earth and he would take care of this problem. They needn't worry that he would soon be making his appearance. And in preparation for that, he said the demigods and their wives should also take birth in the Yadu dynasty so that there would be many, many devotees and demigods ready to assist him in his pastimes. Now, meanwhile, of course, Devaki is getting married to Vasudev, and her brother, Kamsa, is driving the chariot on this auspicious wedding day. Well, the auspicious wedding day soon becomes not so auspicious as Kamsa hears a voice from the sky warning him that the eighth child of Devaki, of his sister, will be the cause of his death. Kamsa, of course, becomes very concerned, very frightened. He immediately wants to kill Devaki. Vasudeva talks him out of it, appeals to his higher reasoning and higher nature, at least a little bit, what very small higher nature was there in Kamsa. And he agreed not to kill her because, after all, it was only the eighth child that was prophesied to kill him. But he imprisoned them, of course, in his prison, and year after year went by. Six sons were born of Devaki, and each time Kamsa killed those sons. Finally, there was the seventh pregnancy, and of course, Krishna ordered Yogamaya to transfer the child within the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. Rohini was also Vasudeva's wife, but he had her go to Vrindavan, where, I don't know if it's technically Vrindavan, but Gokul, at that time, where she would be safe. So of course, that child was transferred to the womb of Rohini and was born as Balaram, the seventh child who preceded Krishna by a year. So finally, after that point, Krishna is ready to appear. It's stated in the Bhagavatam that Krishna first appeared in the mind of Vasudeva and completely illuminated Vasudeva with full knowledge and just incredible bliss. And then from the mind of Vasudeva, it was transferred to the mind of Devaki. And then it's described that sometime later, a few days later, it was transferred to the womb of Devaki. While Devaki had Krishna in her womb, she appeared glorious. In fact, she was incredibly effulgent. And by her appearance and her effulgence, of course, Kamsa could understand that this was probably the end for him, that this was the child. But he decided not to kill her then, because that would be even too demoniac even for Kamsa to kill his pregnant sister. So he said, I will wait for the child to be born, then I will do what is necessary. But because of her wonderful condition, her right effulgence, the demigods could understand that this was indeed Krishna in the womb of Devaki, ready to make his appearance. And thus, we come to this chapter where the demigods are offering many wonderful prayers and glorification of Krishna. And in this particular verse we read today, very, very nice verse, indicating not only the transcendental qualities of Krishna, but how these contrast with the qualities of the living entity and how Krishna's birth is different than the birth of the ordinary jiva souls, but yet at the same time we are hearing from this verse in purport how the understanding of Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's appearance can help the living entity to become free from their material condition of life. So, one of the important aspects of this verse is the understanding that Krishna appears by his own will. It's described that he appears because of due to his pleasure potency, or Hladini Shakti. It is not for any other reason or any other cause, ultimately, that Krishna comes into this material world. Krishna is, of course, totally spiritual, totally transcendental. He has nothing to do with this material energy, but is only because of his will that he decides to come and appear in this material universe. It's described in the first chapter, the seventh verse, that this word Maya Manushasya says that he appears like an ordinary person. So he gives the appearance of an ordinary person, although of course he is totally transcendental. So in this appearance as an ordinary person, of course, the non-devotees are covered by Mahamaya, and they do not understand the nature of Krishna. In fact, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explained in one class that he said perhaps maybe 50 people on this entire planet actually understood who Krishna was, even when he was here, present before them. Most of the ordinary people did not really understand that this was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Only those devotees, intimate devotees, really could understand this. So he is covered, of course, by Mahamaya from the sight of the non-devotees, but the devotees are covered by Yogamaya. That internal energy, the other aspect, the original aspect of Mahamaya, of course, is Yogamaya, which covers the devotees in such a way, the spiritual energy, to always increase their love and the ecstatic relationships they have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna appears like an ordinary person, but the devotees understand his transcendental glories. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.25, Krishna says, Natang prakashya sarvasya yogamaya samavita mudho yang navichanati lokomam acham avyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my internal potency, yogamaya, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So while Krishna is covered by many people, and humanity at large does not understand his transcendental position, does not understand that he is God, even though he appears as a small child in Vrindavan, Krishna, of course, reveals his real nature to his devotees. And, of course, in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna very clearly states the reason for his appearance. In Bhagavad Gita 4.6, he says, Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim svam adishtaya sambhavam yatma mayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna appears in every millennium, once in a day of Brahma, and he comes specifically according to his particular schedule, but yet it is his schedule. He is not bound by some material schedule or causation of the planetary systems. He is the creator of all the universal systems, and therefore by his will he appears at a particular time. And then of course in the next verse, Krishna of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains why he comes. Krishna states that the reason for his appearance is for three reasons. Parichanayam sadhunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharmasam starpa nartayo sambhavami yoge yoge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So for these reasons, and we can see in the appearance of Lord Krishna, to annihilate the miscreants, that the earth was overburdened by Kamsa, Jarasandha, Shishupal, all of these demoniac kings were in control of most of the planet. So Krishna needed to appear to take care of the situation, to destroy the demoniac forces. He also came to reestablish the principles of religion. It's described how he personally spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. He explained how the disciplic succession of Bhagavad Gita had been broken and its knowledge was lost. So he came again to speak Bhagavad Gita and to reestablish this religion throughout the world. And of course he came to save his devotees, to protect his devotees. So we see, of course, that Devaki and Vasudeva were protected. The residents of Vrindavan were protected again and again from the different demons that appeared. And we see that throughout his entire pastimes with the Pandavas and with Draupadi, with Kunti, in so many ways, Krishna protected his devotees over and over. And in fact, in the very beginning of the 10th canto, it's explained and mentioned again that Parikshit Maharaj was very interested in hearing about the appearance and the pastimes of Lord Krishna because he recalled how Krishna had saved him. Parikshit himself was saved in the womb of Uttara from the Abhashvatthama, and Krishna personally entered the womb of Uttara and saved Parikshit from annihilation of this very, very devastating, terrible weapon. You know, so again and again we see this, we see how Krishna is always giving protection and always giving shelter to his devotees. And in fact, it's interesting that in the purport to 4.8, Srila Prabhupada explains that it is not actually necessary for Krishna to come and kill the demons, that primarily he comes for his devotees. Srila Prabhupada says, as far as the atheists are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them, as he did with the demons, Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish the demons. But the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees, who are always harassed by the demoniac. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than to kill Kamsa. But both were performed simultaneously. Therefore it is said here that to deliver the devotee and to vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. So this is, of course, a very important and interesting point. It is primarily for the deliverance of the devotees. It is primarily for increasing the loving relationships with the devotees that Krishna appears. As it is stated, he can destroy the demons in so many ways. He can bring about all kinds of natural disasters. He can arrange so many ways. Everyone in this material world is being killed. Everyone is experiencing birth and death. This is not difficult. The material energy can take care of this very well. But Krishna simultaneously accomplishes many things at once. So simultaneously, he kills the demons. He establishes the principles of religion. He saves his devotees. He gives pleasure to his devotees. And he performs so many wonderful pastimes for the devotees to relish. So the Supreme Personality of Krishna is revealed throughout the scriptures. Although he is not always understood as the Supreme Person or exactly what his position is, the Srimad Bhagavatam makes this very clear. Krishna is not an incarnation of Vishnu. He is not simply a Leela avatar. He is not a powerful personality. He is not one of the Hindu triumvirate or trinity of Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. So many different conceptions are there. But the Vaishnavas, the devotees, understand the real position of Krishna as described in Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Ete chamsa kala pungsam krishnastu bhagavan swayam intarari vyakilam lokam hridayanti yuge yuge. This is after, of course, all of the different scheduled incarnations are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Then this verse is described. All of the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions of the Lord. But Lord Sri Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. All of them appear on planets whenever there is disturbance created by the atheists. The Lord incarnates to protect the theists. So This is actually, Jiva Goswami has explained that this is one of the key verses, or one of the most critical and important verses of the entire Bhagavatam, because actually the entire philosophy and the pastimes of the Bhagavatam are built around this central principle of Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and everything leading up to the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam helps us to understand the real position of Krishna. And then once we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the origin of all, he is the Supreme Controller, everything else is emanating from him, once we fully understand that position, then we can properly understand and relish the pastimes that Krishna has given in the rest of the 10th canto. So we will not mistake Krishna as an ordinary person, or Krishna as a great personality, or a demigod, or an incarnation of Vishnu. Fully understanding Krishna's greatness, his glories, and his true position, then from that position we can enter more and more deeply into the more intimate pastimes of Krishna, and so much enjoy and appreciate this Vrindavan Leela. Now, it's also interesting that in this purport, it's all the position of Krishna is clearly explained, and the position of the living entity is also contrasted. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport quotes this verse. It's actually, I looked it up, it's from the Prema Vivarta, number 2, Krishna Bahirmukha Haya Bhogavancha Kare Niktasta Maya Tare Japatiya Tare. As soon as one becomes inimical to Krishna and desires sense gratification, he is immediately struck down by the illusory energy of the Lord. So in contrast to Krishna, who is always totally aloof from the material energy, the living entity, as soon as we contact material energy, we become entangled in it. And of course, the root cause is mentioned in this verse, that one becomes inimical to Krishna and desires sense gratification. So our desire to forget Krishna, to not serve Krishna, and conversely, our desire to serve ourselves and enjoy within this material world, those desires more or less come together, you know, simultaneously, and thus we are put into this material world. So later in this purport, Prabhupada says we are entangled in karma and karmapala meaning the results of karma. And so because of these material activities and the results of these material activities, we get further and further, we increase this position of forgetfulness and become more and more entangled within the material world. So the position of the living entity would be quite hopeless. We're very, very covered by the material world, by the material energy. We've been in this universe for countless thousands, if not millions of lifetimes. Very, very little understanding of how to get out of it. We don't really understand our own position. We do not understand who we are. But out of Krishna's causeless mercy, he comes to deliver the living entities. So, as we were stating in Bhagavad Gita, he mentions his purpose of coming to this material world primarily to deliver the living entities and to give pleasure to his devotees as he establishes religious principles and takes care of the demons at the same time. So Krishna appears for these many reasons, and he also appears for his own pleasure. Krishna enjoys different pastimes. So ultimately we say, why does Krishna come? Why does Krishna do this? Why does he incarnate? He comes out of his own enjoyment. He enjoys these pleasure pastimes with his devotees. And so while we understand that the jiva is always under the energy of the Lord, always very much connected with the Lord, either through yoga maya or through mahamaya. But when the living entity turns back to Krishna and once again wants to reestablish his loving relationship with Krishna, then he comes under the internal potency, comes under this yoga maya potency of the Lord. And of course, the position of yoga maya is always to enhance the pastimes of Krishna. In the spiritual world, of course, and in Vrindavan, there's so many pastimes, so many stories there, that yoga maya is always helping to make arrangements. Yoga maya, the internal potency of Krishna, is making all of these loving relationships between Krishna and the gopis, and Krishna and his other devotees and associates in Vrindavan. So this is the very wonderful opportunity that we have to once again enter into the internal energy and experience our loving relationship with Krishna. And these times like Janmashtami and these very special days and appearance days give us a special opportunity and a special impetus to remember Krishna and to remember his pastimes. And of course, his pastime of appearing upon this world is such an important pastime. Of course, all of his different pastimes are equally important, but this gives us an opportunity particularly to remember Krishna and remember how important to us his appearance on this earth was. So the culmination of Krishna's pastimes, of all of his different incarnations, the culmination is actually these personal pastimes in Vrindavan. So Krishna appears, of course he has his different pastimes, but the devotees particularly relish these Vrindavan pastimes that Krishna displays. We know that he has his different leelas, his Ishvara leela, Adurya pastimes, the Madhurya pastimes, his pastimes of mercy and magnanimity, which he exhibits as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He also has his pastimes as Vishnu or Narayan, his Ishvara pastimes, where he exhibits his full power and greatness as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the devotees particularly appreciate these Madhurya pastimes, or pastimes of sweetness, where Krishna appears in Vrindavan and in the different rasas, with the cowherd boys, with the gopis, with Mother Yashoda, Mother Devaki, Nanda Maharaj, Vasudev, you know, the calves, and all of these wonderful pastimes are relishable by the devotees. So these very, very sweet pastimes of Vrindavan are meant to captivate our hearts. They are actually there, and they are given to us in the Srimad Bhagavatam so that our hearts will change, and we will become very attracted to Krishna and attracted to these very relishable pastimes. Krishna's pastimes are superior to anyone else's. There is no one who exhibits the pastimes that Krishna does and exhibits the qualities of Krishna. The Nectar Devotion, Bhaktisamrita Sindhu, tells us there are 64 qualities of Krishna. And 50 of these qualities are sometimes, at least partially, manifested by living entities, particularly pure devotees. Another 5 pastimes are exhibited by Lord Shiva and by Lord Brahma. And another 5 of those qualities are shown and exhibited in the form of Narayan. But there are 4 qualities that Krishna alone possesses. And they are exhibited by Krishna. And those 4 qualities are, the first, that he is the performer of wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially childhood pastimes. We see very few childhood pastimes in any other incarnation, right? I mean, very, very rarely, maybe just a little bit. We hear a little bit of maybe Lord Ramachandra's life or that, but the full exhibition of these wonderful childhood pastimes, and of course this Vatsalya Rasa particularly, is exhibited fully in Krishna. He's also surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of Godhead. Krishna's devotees are considered by all authorities to be the highest devotees. They exhibit the highest love of Godhead, and of course, particularly the gopis and Srimati Radharani are the very pinnacle of pure love of God, a prema devotional service. He can attract all living entities all over the universes by playing on his flute. No other incarnation of Krishna plays on the flute and attracts all living entities in that way. And finally, he has an excellence of beauty which cannot be rivaled anywhere in creation. So Krishna, the form of Krishna, is the most beautiful form. It is, of course, Krishna means all attractive. So the form of Krishna attracts everyone. Nobody can help but be attracted by this beautiful form of Krishna. I was noticing, I thought it was very, I don't know, it was a very nice experience when the curtains opened and the devotees are all crowded around and you can't even get the devotees to sit down. You know, everyone is just so attractive. They want to see Krishna in his new outfits and his beautiful decorations. You know, and it's such an incredible thing that Krishna just so much attracts the hearts of his devotees. You know, so this is, and it's because, partly because he is the most beautiful. His excellence of beauty is unsurpassed. Of course, Krishna is called Bhagavan as well. Krishna is full in all opulences. This is described in the Vishnu Purana. says the Sanskrit word Bhagavan is explained by the great authority of Parasara Muni, the father of Vyasadeva, the Supreme Personality who possesses all riches, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation is called Bhagavan. There are many persons who are rich, powerful, beautiful, famous, learned, and detached, but no one can claim that he possesses all riches, all strength, etc., entirely. Only Krishna can claim this because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a very, very wonderful position, the supreme position of Krishna that nobody can match, what to speak of surpass. So the devotees have this wonderful appreciation for Krishna, particularly on his appearance day. I'm going to, you know, read a little bit in the next chapter about his actual appearance, but I wanted to end here with one final verse. This is from the Brahma Vimohana Lila. Lord Brahma, after stealing the cows and the coward boys, 10.14.7, says, Gunatmanas tepi gunan vimatum itavatir nasya ka isharesha kalena yarya vimita sukalpayar bupangshava ke mihika dhudvasha. In time, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count all the atoms of the earth, the particles of the snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? So, a few minutes left. Read a little bit from the third chapter, the birth of Lord Krishna. Okay. Starting from the first verse, chapter 3. Thereafter, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashvini. The sun, the moon, and the other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs, full of lilies and lotuses, were extraordinarily beautiful. In the trees and green plants, full of flowers and leaves, pleasing to the eyes, birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to blow, pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the Brahmins engaged in ritualistic ceremonies ignited their fires, according to the Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and Brahmins, who had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts, and kettle drums simultaneously vibrated from the upper planetary system. The Kanaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. And the Vijadharis, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. The demigods and great saintly persons showered flowers in a joyous mood, and clouds gathered in the sky very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean's waves. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon, because Devaki was of the same category as Sri Krishna. Vasudeva then saw the newborn child, who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes and who bore in his four hands the four weapons, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Srivats, and on his neck the brilliant Kustoba gem. Dressed in yellow, his body blackish like a dense cloud, his scattered hair fully grown, and his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with a valuable gem, Vadurya. The child, decorated with brilliant belt, armlets, bangles, and other ornaments appeared very wonderful. When Vasudeva saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them amongst the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. O Maharaj Parikshit, descendant of King Bharata, Vasudeva could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless. Bowing down with folded hands and concentrating his attention, he began to offer prayers to the child, who illuminated his birthplace by his natural influence. Vasudeva said, "My Lord, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly." Vasudeva offers a number of prayers. We'll skip ahead. Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Thereafter, having seen that her child had all the symptoms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Devaki, who was very much afraid of Kamsa and unusually astonished, began to offer prayers to the Lord." Now, Devaki offers a number of very wonderful prayers to Krishna. Now, continuing at text 32, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, 'My dear mother, best of the chaste, in your previous birth, in the Swayambhuva millennium, you were known as Prishni, and Vasudeva, who was the most pious Prajapati, was named Sutapa. When both of you were ordered by Lord Brahma to create progeny, you underwent severe austerities by controlling your senses. My dear father and mother, you endured rain, wind, strong sun, scorching heat, and severe cold, suffering all sorts of inconvenience according to different seasons. By practicing pranayama to control the air within the body through yoga, and by eating only air and dry leaves fallen from the trees, you cleansed from your mind all dirty things. In this way, desiring a benediction from me, you worship me with peaceful minds. Thus you spent 12,000 celestial years performing difficult activities of tapasya and consciousness of me, Krishna consciousness. O sinless mother Devaki, after the expiry of 12,000 celestial years, in which you constantly contemplated me within the core of your heart with great faith, devotion, and austerity, I was very much satisfied with you. Since I am the best of all bestowers of benediction, I appeared in the same form as Krishna to ask you to take from me the benediction you desired. You then expressed your desire to have a son exactly like me. Being husband and wife, but always sonless, you were attracted by sexual desire, for by the influence of Deva Maya, transcendental love, you wanted to have me as your son. Therefore, you never desired to be liberated from this material world. After you received that benediction and I disappeared, you engaged yourself in sex to have a son like me, and I fulfilled your desire. Since I found no one else as highly elevated as you in simplicity and other qualities of good character, I appeared in this world as Prishni Garba, or one who is celebrated as having taken birth from Prishni. In the next millennium, I again appeared from the two of you, who appeared as my mother Aditi and my father Kashyapa. I was known as Upendra, and because of being a dwarf, I was also known as Vamana. O supremely chaste mother, I, the same personality, have now appeared of you both as your son for the third time. Take my words as the truth. I have shown you this form of Vishnu just to remind you of my previous birth. Otherwise, if I appeared like an ordinary human child, you would not believe the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu had indeed appeared. Both of you, husband and wife, constantly think of me as your son, but always know that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By thus thinking of me constantly with love and affection, you will achieve the highest perfection, returning home back to Godhead." Shukadeva Goswami said, after thus instructing his father and mother, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna remained silent. In their presence, by his internal energy, he then transformed himself into a small human child. In other words, he transformed himself into his original form, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, in parentheses. Thereafter, exactly when Vasudeva, being inspired by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to take the newborn child from the delivery room, Yogamaya, the Lord's spiritual energy took birth as the daughter of the wife of Maharaj Nanda. By the influence of Yoga Maya, all the doorkeepers fell fast asleep, their senses unable to work, and the other inhabitants of the house also fell deeply asleep. When the sun rises, the darkness automatically disappears. Similarly, when Vasudeva appeared, the closed doors, which were strongly pinned with iron and locked with iron chains, opened automatically. Since the clouds in the sky were mildly thundering and showering, Anantanaga, an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, followed Vasudeva, beginning from the door, with hoods expanded to protect Vasudeva and the Transcendental Child. Because of the constant rain sent by the demigod Indra, the river Yamuna was filled with deep water, foaming about with fiercely whirling waves. But as the great Indian Ocean had formally given way to Lord Ramachandra by allowing him to construct a bridge, the river Yamuna gave way to Vasudeva and allowed him to cross. When Vasudeva reached the house of Nanda Maharaj, he saw that all the coward men were fast asleep. Thus he placed his own son on the bed of Yashoda, picked up her daughter, an expansion of Yoga Maya, and then returned to his residence, the present prison house of Kamsa. Vasudeva placed the female child on the bed of Devaki, bound his legs with the iron shackles, and thus remained there as before. This ends the Bhaktivedanta Purports, 10th Canto, 3rd Chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, The Birth of Lord Krishna. Jai. Sri Krishna Janmastami Ki Jai. So we have a few minutes. If anyone would like to add anything, comments or questions. Okay. Hi. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.